Welcome back to the Life After College Athletics podcast. Today on the podcast, we have a special guest. It's not every day that you get to talk to a guy who bets on himself and continues to push the limits, even outside of athletics. So Jackson Mitchell, he was a walk-on football player at SMU, where he earned a scholarship and became a team captain at the end of his career. Nominated for the Burlesworth Trophy, which, for those who don't know about that, it's awarded to the best college football player who started their career as a walk-on. Since then, he's worked and had involvement with multiple startups and Fortune 500 companies. He's a professional performance coach right now and runs a company called Walk-On Mentality. So we're excited to dive into his story and learn from you. So welcome on, Jackson.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm super honored to be here. Love what you guys are doing. And I'm excited to have a great conversation.
Sweet.
Awesome. I see you're even repping the gear.
Yeah, you already know.
That Walk-On Mentality, I love it. Got it. We got to get some of that on our backs so we can rep it too. Well, first we want to thank you for your time to come on, but let's first dive into your story. If you want to give us a 2-minute synopsis of how you walked on to SMU and kind of that journey.
Yeah. 2 minutes. All right, let's do it. Was not highly recruited out of high school. I grew up in a town called South Lake, which is, if you're familiar with Texas high school football, it's kind of a powerhouse. So a lot of colleges are coming in and out of there. And I was a good player, but did not start my junior year. And like I said, with the recruiting specifically in Texas, if you're not getting an offer by freshman, sophomore year, there's a pretty good chance that you could get left behind. So didn't start my junior season, went into my senior year, had a good year. But when it came time to figure out where I was going to go play next, I only had offers from the Air Force Academy and from Stephen F. Austin, which Stephen F. Austin is a D1AA school in Nacogdoches, Texas. Didn't really want to go there. And, the Air Force Academy is a phenomenal opportunity to get to serve our country. But I think if you're not committed fully to the service aspect, and that's not kind of like top of what you want to do, then it could potentially be a bad decision to go dedicate 4 years and then 4 more years minimum after graduation to that. So my dad and I went through and sent my film probably to every school in the country, USC, Indiana, Minnesota, like you name it, they probably got my film. And SMU got back to us and said, hey, we don't have any scholarships. We'd love to have Jackson come walk on. And so that was when I made my decision, like, I'm going to bet on myself. I know my work ethic. I know what I'm capable of, and let's go see what we can do. And so decided to walk on at SMU. And that's kind of where the journey began.
Is that kind of the motivation with the Walk-On Mentality brand? But what do you guys do now, and how is that from SMU and walking on there transferred to what you're doing now?
Yeah, so my whole professional career has been the Walk-On Mentality, but just in different phases. So the first kind of iteration of the Walk-On Mentality was obviously what I just mentioned with my college football career beginning that way. But what I do now is I work with primarily former athlete professionals, but I help them emulate the Walk-On Mentality in their own life, which the Walk-On Mentality is the mindset that there are no limits to what we can accomplish, and we believe in ourselves, and we're also willing to do the work to achieve our goals. So whether that's professional or physical, you know, running a race or competing in a competition, whether it's in your career, going for that next promotion, or maybe starting your own business, like, so many of us limit ourselves because we're scared to maybe take that risk or kind of see what is it that our full potential really is. And so I help people do that. But how that's kind of manifested in other phases of my career is just like working in fields like medical device sales, enterprise software. You know, those are fields where when I first started pursuing opportunities, I was told, hey, you know, without XYZ experience under your belt, there's a pretty low likelihood that you're going to be able to get an opportunity in this industry. But my mindset was always like, no, like, I believe that I can do this. I know what I'm capable of. I know the type of teammate and professional I am. I know that I have this specific type of work ethic, and all I need is an opportunity to prove that I can sit at that table, that I can be in that room, and not only that I can be in that room, but that I can excel in that room. And so when you have that level of belief in yourself, that I believe that just gives you more opportunities because you're willing to go for it. And if you don't go for something, then there's a pretty good chance you're not going to get it. So, working in those industries, specifically the Walk-On Mentality played out. And then, yeah, you know, building a business too, it's like, for me personally, there was a ton of fear around it, even though I had this mindset already. It was like, I'm telling myself and telling people that there are no limits, but you know, there's a certain step that you have to take to really build a business and bet on yourself in that way. And so again, like this business is me living out the walk-on mentality in another way. I think I answered the question, hopefully.
Yeah, no, that's great. Especially like with your business and your brand, you talk a lot about how you spent years and years just pretending to be someone that was different than who you really are. Mm-hmm. And that backfired on you. Can you explain that? And how did that happen? And what did you learn in that process?
Yeah, I think, you know, one thing that you guys do with this podcast is you talk about the gap and the transition between being a student athlete and then transitioning into the professional workplace. And I think for me, you know, I attached so much of my value to my athletic performance for such a long time. And it was like, you know, who's Jackson Mitchell? Oh, well, he's the captain of the SMU football team. And like my poster's hanging on campus and that is who I am. And then that also kind of trickled over into my personal life, like the way that I spent my time, probably really the first year and a half out of college. It was like, I was trying to figure out how to recreate that in life without sports. And it was supremely challenging. And what it led to was my vision of success was having that having that med device sales job or having that enterprise software sales job and doing those things. But then whenever I would get that quote unquote identity, it was never really enough. So when I say it backfired, for the longest time, I wrapped up my value in things of the world and things outside of myself. And really, like, you know, I don't know if you guys talk about this on the podcast much, but like my faith is incredibly important to me. And so really what it's come back to is like recognizing that like our value is not in achievement or in a job title or amount of money that we make. Like for me, my value is in the fact that like I was created in the image of Jesus Christ, and that's enough for me to be, you know, successful, quote unquote, or happy or healthy or whatever it might be. Honestly, therapy and some other things like that really helped me navigate that like transition post sports and really figuring out how to communicate around emotions and different things of that nature that I don't think we're really conditioned to, especially as like tough men, student athletes, high performers. It's like, nah, we just suppress how we feel and push through pain. You know, all we're taught to do is like kind of win to a degree. But if we have the wrong idea of what winning is, then it can get kind of hairy.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think there's one aspect that you mentioned that it is tricky to hold true to yourself, especially like, let's say you're just starting out in a career, you're making new friends with your coworkers, but likely your coworkers come from different backgrounds and some of which are not as in a motivated place as yours was. And mm-hmm. so keeping yourself true to your goals and how you see yourself becoming as you journey through the professional career, it's probably one of the hardest things to do, because if you're not surrounded by those individuals day in, day out, you're the only one talking to yourself. You know, you got to be that person and that voice inside your head. So right. Like, what are some of the things that you did? Because transitioning out of a professional career, especially one that's paying well, is not an easy task. I mean, Jake just did it and we can dive into a little bit of that, but would love to hear how you kind of made that transition and why, you know, like,
yeah.
Why did you decide to go on your own?
Well, I think a number of things. I think that specifically is a reason why a lot of people stay in jobs that they're not necessarily happy with, is that they feel like there's no other opportunity to earn that type of money or to kind of meet that standard of success in other ways. And so for me, like I mentioned earlier, it was like, I actually really enjoyed the work in medical device sales, but I knew that what I wanted to do full time was coach people to pursue their goals, whatever they may be. I knew what I wanted to do full time was empower people to like maximize their full potential in these different areas. But, you know, the medical device sales job, like I knew I was going to make at least X amount. The software sales job, I knew I was going to make at least X amount. So it's a lot of like, oh man, like this is really comfortable and this feels really safe. And so like, why would I walk away from something that feels really safe for something that's maybe a little bit more, I don't know if volatile is the word, but maybe a little more unpredictable. But what I have found with entrepreneurship is like, there's two ways to look at it. You can look at it as like, oh, this is really safe. My corporate professional career is really safe. And like, I need to stay there. Or you can look at entrepreneurship as like, wow, now I'm really in control of how much I'm earned. I'm really in control of the kind of impact I have. And for me, it was flipping that switch in my mind of like, yeah, all these jobs are great, but now like this is fully in my control to a degree, and how hard I work is going to dictate my level of success. That doesn't always mean that it's comfortable, but the reality is like I said, it's the walk-on mentality. So it's like, you know, how far can I take this? How many people can I help? There's a lot of people in this population, right? So it's like, how hard do I want to work to reach the people that need this kind of support and guidance? And that's, so it's all on me. And I love it when, you know, my back's against the wall and I've got the ball with 3 seconds left on the clock. Like, I want to take that shot. So how did I navigate like stepping away from the comfortable, like the comfort in that? Is that, that was the question, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it really just came to evaluating kind of everything, right? Like, I have been doing this stuff on the side for about 3.5 years. And so I kind of knew, not kind of, but like I had an idea of what my potential would be from an earning perspective. And I could compare that to what I was making doing work that wasn't necessarily fulfilling for me. There's also, you know, in my experience, in my opinion, like people rank their career and what they do based on a number of different things, right? Like, some people put money at the top of list of importance. Some people have work-life balance at the top. Some people want to do fulfilling work. Some people want great benefits, right? Like, everybody has different ranks. And so for the first several years of my career, I would say that money was like the number one thing. And it was like, I have to have the highest paying job possible. And once I get to a certain level of income, like, I'm good. But what I kept finding is that like with every promotion or every jump to a different job that would pay me more, it was still like, man, what I really want to do is work that I feel like is impactful and purpose driven and making a difference. And so being able to, you know, because I had worked in those well-paying jobs for a long time, being able to be in a position where I could step away and still have the opportunity to earn that type of money, but also have the opportunity to really do work that I feel is impactful. Like, you know, when I look back on the experience, it's all just part of the plan and it all makes sense. Cause even though I was frustrated at times in those corporate jobs, they ultimately set me up and gave me experience that is valuable for me to do what I do now.
I liked a couple of things you said. One of the things, I think a lot of people don't think about this because they get caught in the W-2 job and they live in the sphere that they're living in now. But a guy explained this really well when I was working at Oracle, is that as a software engineer at Oracle, you might get paid really well and it's like a consistent paycheck every day. But guess how the company actually makes money? We have to go out and sell this software, right? So there's salespeople that are on the front line earning commission out in the trenches fighting for sales. And I just get a constant paycheck. I'm like removed from the sales experience and I don't see what's actually being fought. So when you look at it that way, it's like, dang, I'm relying on these salespeople. I have no idea who they are. Don't know their name. Don't know their skill set. Don't know how they think or their integrity or their background. And I'm relying on them for my paycheck, even though it seems stable. Right. And so that's what I love about your story, is like, you're well aware of that and you can bet on yourself, just like you did in football. You bet on yourself in business. And if I can learn the sales skills and I can learn how to provide for myself, provide for my family. You mentioned it with your faith, like, it is biblical to provide for your family and to leave an inheritance for your family. And so if you have the skills that you can do that and you don't have to rely on another department to bring you income, then that's, I mean, it's very self-sustainable, you know?
Throughout my entire career, like, I knew I wanted to do this and I could never get myself to kind of take that step off the ledge to take that quote unquote leap of faith. But like I said a minute ago, I'm so grateful for all the experience that I do have because I've learned so much about sales and marketing and how to, you know, communicate professionally and write up a contract and do all these things that, you know, if I would have started doing this or tried to start doing this at 21 or 22, like, sure, I probably would have figured it out. But I just had a lot more experience that I could immediately act on and lean into that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And yeah, to your point too, like, bulk of my career was spent in sales. And like, the salespeople know, sales is not an easy job, like, at all. I mean, sales is a grind. And to be good at it, you gotta, like, you have flexibility, sure, but you gotta grind. And a buddy of mine who sold for a really long time and ultimately ended up getting into some entrepreneurial ventures himself, his uncle was a very successful entrepreneur, sold multiple multi-million dollar businesses. And his uncle told him two pieces of advice. One I'm going to leave out because it's irrelevant, but the other piece of advice was, don't put the health of you or your family in the hands of somebody else. So like, you know, and I'm not sitting here telling everybody who's listening that they should start a business and be an entrepreneur. I think it's, I think corporate America is a phenomenal thing. Like everybody needs to find a way to make income. It doesn't matter how it's done, as long as it's ethical and legal, of course.
Can't do illegal stuff to make money. That's not allowed.
No, I would say no. My buddy's uncle told him, you know, a company can let you go in the blink of an eye. And then all of a sudden you have no healthcare benefits, and that if you've got a family, then they don't have healthcare benefits. And so, funny enough, my buddy had been let go from like pretty much every company he'd worked for, even though he was like a high performing individual. But it's like, you know, you look at all the layoffs that are happening in tech right now, and I'm sure a lot of people who are very good at their job are being let go. And it's like, mm-hmm. you feel like that's really safe and stable, but in the blink of an eye, it can all be stripped away. And so even if your corporate job is your main focus, at least having something on the side that can make you money and give you the opportunity to provide for yourself and your family, like that's a good idea. It's never going to be a bad idea. So kind of got on a little tangent there, but yeah, I'm grateful for all the experience I've had up to that point where I did decide I'm going to go do this full time.
Yeah. That's something that Rylan and I have talked about a lot before is even coming out of college, like, we've said this with previous guests as well, but you brought it up. So like when you were 21, you weren't necessarily ready to go and start a business. You could have figured it out for sure. Like you knew how to bet on yourself, but Rylan and I have both said that it's been super beneficial in our careers to go work for somebody else and get paid to learn and learn mm-hmm. what we like, what we don't like, get new skills. It's very helpful to get paid to learn while you're trying to still figure out and you still are, you know, 21, 22, 23 years old.
I'd love to ask you, and maybe you didn't think about it this way, or maybe you didn't plan it this way, and maybe it was just a more sporadic type thing. But Jake and I have mentioned this, when people are looking for a new opportunity, and entrepreneurship isn't for everybody, but even mm-hmm. in a sense that, let's say someone wants to go work at a job where they're of a higher priority, you know, they're at a greater position at a firm and they're more valued, like their time is such. You have to make some strategic decisions and manage the outcome of that well in advance. So let's say you just started fresh out of college and your goal is ultimately to start a marketing or agency firm. Obviously, the best route would be to go get experience, go learn kind of the ropes in the industry, understand marketing agency, how to sell those. But then in order to kind of sustain the lifestyle you want to sustain and kind of accomplish where you want to be in life, you have to plan backwards. So if you're making X amount of dollars and you're comfortable with that X amount of dollars in that career, 4 years into that career, you likely are probably going to want to make that same amount. And so to be risk adverse, you got to plan backwards. Okay, this is how much it's going to cost me to start my own marketing agency firm. This is how much it costs me to live currently. This is the money I need to put aside up until then so I can fund all these resources. These are the amount of people I need to hire to scale. It's mm-hmm. kind of a ladder backwards, you know, the pyramid is flipped upside down at that point.
100%. Yeah, no, it's reverse engineering. Like there's telescope goals and there's microscope goals. So to your point, if the goal is to set or start a big marketing agency and you know what that looks like, there's going to be a lot of intermediate steps that it takes to get there. So you have the big goal, but plan backwards and plan the intermediate steps. For me, that's what it was. And I'm fortunate because my business is low overhead and it's like, I'm a solopreneur. I don't have employees. Like the work that I do is me and my clients, and I use Zoom for clients who aren't local to my city. And then if they're local to my city, I can meet in person wherever we want. So it's really nice from that standpoint. But if you have a business that requires overhead, you 100% have to have a budget for that. You have to have a budget for taxes that you have to pay depending on the state you live in. You have like, so immediately, like any money that my business makes, I know that 20% of that off the bat is going taxes, and anything I want to pay myself is going to be impacted by that from the jump. So yeah, I mean, you have to consider it all. And I think I'm really fortunate because I started to learn about budgeting and things of that nature at a pretty young age, learned about saving money and learned about how to manage my money and whatnot. And so, you know, having a nest egg that you've built is also a really good thing, because then, you know, you can kind of plan for the unplannable, if that makes sense. Cause you never know what's going to happen, right? So you don't ever want to put yourself in a bad position, which again is why it's valuable to get experience and get paid to learn, because ultimately you're stacking and setting yourself up to have a foundation. So my business is coaching, it's public speaking, and it's my podcast. And so you know, I have to have a budget for gas if I'm traveling to speak somewhere. I have to have a budget for my podcast equipment. I have to have a budget for the studio if I'm renting it out. I have to have a budget to pay editors if I need somebody to create content for Instagram, where I typically actually edit the audio portion of my podcast. But, you know, for anything that I'm not doing, like, I'm probably going to be paying for it. So I have to take that into account as well. So, you know, you see a lot of stuff, I think, on LinkedIn. Like, Sahil Bloom is somebody who I really respect and like the stuff that he shares.
We love him.
And yeah, and like Marcus Frick is another guy. Like, there's a handful of guys who will talk exactly about this and talk about approaching, you know, that position where you're going to leave a business. And their advice is like, don't leave until you make at least what you make at your day job. But I think really what it comes down to is like recognizing, okay, what are my expenses to live? Like, what do I need to make to pay my bills? What do I need to make to live that lifestyle that I want? And then at that point, are you comfortable stepping away? So I think everybody has a different threshold for it. And like myself, dude, so risk averse. But I also think in a way, like when you have to look at risk, you have to be responsible, but at the same time, like, it's really easy to look at those risks and then just kind of use them as an excuse to just stay the same. And I think, you know, maybe not everybody has the awareness to recognize that they're doing that, but I think if you have the awareness to see that you're just kind of using it as an excuse to maybe not push as hard with your business or maybe not grow, then something needs to happen. So, kind of a long-winded answer, but I think you definitely need to be strategic. You realize when you leave the company that pays you every 2 weeks that, oh, it really is up to me to create the money, which the way I look at it, that's a phenomenal opportunity, but it's also scary. And the reality is, what I've experienced when it comes to facing fears is like, we suffer a lot more in our heads than in reality. And when we push past that fear, whether it's having a tough conversation or starting the business or putting something out there, starting a podcast, like, when you push past the fear, you're like, oh, that really wasn't as bad as I thought. And it's actually really well received. And so, yeah, be strategic, create a plan, and then hold yourself accountable to execute, because the plan doesn't mean anything if you're not actually doing it.
I think the execution is where a lot of people, at least for people who are maybe information or math driven like myself, that's where we get caught up. So Pastor James this morning in church literally said that application of information leads to transformation. And yeah. So if you can have a lot of information, but you're not applying it, you will never transform to the person you want to be. So I think that like summarizes what you were just saying. Yeah. I love that. Application of information leads to transformation. So yeah, especially with a lot of social media and a lot of content producers, like for example, like Sahil Bloom, like he's putting out tons of content. And even, I don't know if you're familiar with Ryan Pineda, but he talks about this a lot as well, is like a lot of these people will put out content that's very valuable for business and very valuable for your corporate life. But if you are not applying it, it really is just entertainment. You shouldn't be putting it into an education bucket. You should be putting it into an entertainment bucket. It's no different than, you know, binge watching Netflix, because you're just consuming it and you're not actually taking action of it. So right. Even speaking from my own personal experience, like that action threshold is like what you need to push and make sure that you're very aware of it, like you're saying.
Yes, 100%. Because, yeah, I'm not going to just repeat what you just said, but I couldn't agree more.
Been fortunate enough to see entrepreneurs in early stages of their companies be very successful, and I've seen them crash and burn at the same time. And part of that is sometimes it's unlucky, it's bad timing of the market, or they just don't have a product that the market resonates with, and it doesn't even have to be a product, it could be a service. But other times it's they didn't have the correct implementation of that information. They had a grand idea, but they didn't have the necessary information or the necessary team. Like, you don't always have to have a team, but even to enact that, you know, like if you're going to go on a solopreneurship like yourself, you still have to have some information of how to be successful at that. You know, it doesn't have to be a walk in the park by yourself, because you're more likely than not to fall on your face, but you can avoid some of that falling on your face, avoid some of the scars and bruises if you use some of the prior experiences from others that have done and walked the same road as you. So I think important information, and I'm sure you did this as well, even getting into SMU to play football there, you know, like you're the new guy, don't know a whole lot of people, but the more adaptive you are to create the relationships and have and share that wealth and opportunity with people, more like you are to succeed. So I'd love to hear about how you've continued to create new relationships with multiple and diverse people.
Yeah, it's man, I think you just hit something really important on the head, which is that like relationships are so important. My senior year in college, one of our big focuses was relationships. And it was like, how do I pour into my teammate? How do I pour into my coach? How do I pour into my professor? How do I pour into the person in the community at the store, whatever it may be? Like, how can I pour into other people and serve them? And I 100% wouldn't be where I am without great relationships, whether from a mentor. You know, my best friend Troy comes to mind, like, so grateful for our friendship. I have a coach myself, like, incredibly grateful for him. You know, the therapist that I worked with, like, incredible, right? Like, all these people, my family, my girlfriend, like, without these relationships, like, I mean, what are we without the people around us that support us and love us, right? And like, also, who are we and what are we if we can't find ways to use our gifts to pour back into other people? And, you know, ultimately, like, that's such a big part of why I do what I do. Like, if you would have asked me in 2016, hey, what do you want to do, Jackson? I just knew I wanted to help people. I didn't know what that looked like, but I knew I wanted to help people. And really, like, what I aim to do is help people who are in shoes that I once was in. Like, that's why I do what I do. And so it all comes back to relationship and community. And so what do I do to really foster that? You know, obviously, you guys know, playing a team sport, you're in the locker room, like, boom, built into a community. And so trying to figure out ways to kind of recreate that in life after sports is super beneficial. And you guys both look like you're in shape, so I'd imagine you work out in some capacity. So it's like, whether it's in the gym or, like, for me, when I first got out of college, I got into CrossFit pretty intensely. And so the CrossFit community, like, the gym is called The Box. And within The Box, there is, generally speaking, I've never had a bad experience with a community in a CrossFit box. Everybody's supporting everybody else, no matter if you're deadlifting 500 pounds or deadlifting the bar for the first time, everybody is lifting you up. And that's incredible. So did it there. You know, when I worked in medical device sales, I spent a ton of time with my colleagues and really was able to build strong relationships with my colleagues, with my manager, with the CEO of the company, because I was at a smaller company. So again, building community there. I made the decision just about 2 years ago to leave Dallas, where I pretty much grew up. I mean, South Lake's about 30 minutes outside of Dallas, and then went to SMU, started my career in Dallas, and I decided to move to Austin. And when I got here, it was like, all right, it's time to connect with people and put myself out there. And for me, what that looked like specifically in Austin, which is a huge fitness community, is like going to group fitness meetups, going to run clubs, going to triathlon or cycling clubs, and just introducing myself and just putting yourself out there. Because I think everybody is looking for that connection, and some people just don't know, like, where to find it or how to create it, which I think is another really cool thing. I remember having a conversation with a buddy. I'm trying to think where he lives. Having a conversation with a buddy who was like, man, like, you know, Austin has this great running community, what have you. Like, Michael, why don't you try to start a group in your city and, like, facilitate that? And it's like, oh, I guess I could be the one to build this community here, right? Like, so actually, funny enough, it's Sunday as we're recording. Tomorrow on Monday, like, I'm hosting a community meetup and run with my physical therapist. And, like, we just decided, hey, let's host our own. And, like, let's see who we can bring together. You know, how can we create opportunities for ourselves to connect with more people, but also for the people who come to connect with people that maybe they wouldn't have connected with otherwise. And so, yeah, I think my favorite thing about life truly is, you know, God has a plan for us all. It's already written. And we all have unique gifts and talents that we can use to serve the world. But also, like, we're in the driver's seat of our day to day. Like, if you want to start a community meetup, like, you can do that. Like, if you want to start a podcast, like, you can do that. If you want to come up with a business idea, like, you can do that. If you want to go for the promotion, you can do that. Like, there are all these things at our fingertips every single day that we can do. It's just a matter of making the decision to do them. And so, yeah, back the original question was like, kind of create community and maintain relationships. And it's like, just do it, man. Like, just do it. And I mean, it's really cool, the abundance that's available to us. You know, we just need to make the decision to like go for it and create the lives that we want.
It's a question you asked Max Crosby on your podcast, but I'm going to ask it to you as well. How do you manage your close circle, and how do you weed out the energy vampires, is what you quoted. So
because
I think like you're talking about creating community and creating opportunities for people to meet people. But I think there's also a very powerful line where you need to draw. How do I weed people out of my life so that I can go to the right direction and create the community that I want to be in long term?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think boundaries are an incredibly powerful thing. And I really didn't learn about boundaries until probably the last couple of years. And I think that, again, like we have the ability to draw lines where we want them. And if we feel like a relationship is no longer serving us, there's no longer like a value exchange, then sometimes it's time to cut that relationship off. And it might not be that like the person necessarily did you wrong, and like you may not have negative feelings toward them, but it just may be time for that kind of chapter to close, so to speak. And for me, like there have been relationships that I've had to just call the person and say like, look, I appreciate you, I've appreciated our friendship, but like we don't have space to communicate anymore, or whatever it may be. And that's super uncomfortable, but like sometimes it has to happen. And you know, I'm trying to remember what Max said when I asked him that question, and I think it's a touch different when you're talking about like a Hall of Famer, a future Hall of Famer, because he probably has a lot of people who are like, you know, trying to be in his circle to like really benefit from his like earning. And I can't think of anybody who's like trying to take my money, but but I do think like, you know, boundaries are a huge thing. And I also think, you know, people show you their true colors, like they really do. And you know, again, it comes back to awareness. You know who really like loves you and supports you, regardless of the cadence of which you communicate, regardless of if you're giving them anything, regardless of like the people who really love and value you just for who you are, like you know who those people are. And so I would say, you know, a conversation that I've had quite a bit with my girlfriend's brother-in-law is like, there's a book or something that says there's really only space for like, I think, 6 relationships in your life that you can truly pour into and really foster. And I don't know what the number really is, but what I do know is like the relationships that are truly like strong core relationships that I have, like I know them like the back of my hand, and it doesn't matter if I talk to that person once a week or once a day or once every few months, we're going to pick up right where we left off. There's not going to be a hard feeling in the mix whatsoever around, you know, the period of time from which we've communicated. And so I don't think I really answered the question, but I think it's just, you know, maybe having tough conversations and ultimately just making the decisions that you know are best for you, best for your family, and not feeling like you owe somebody else something. You know, I think people pleasing is a big thing that especially student, like former athletes get caught up in, is like, you know, when you're a player on a team and your coach is telling you what to do, like no matter what it is, you're going to do it and you're not going to talk back. You're just going to say, yes, sir, and like get to work. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a really important skill to actually be able to say like, no, I'm not going to do that because that's not aligned with, you know, my values or what I'm trying to accomplish. And like, if that offends you, it offends you, but like, that's where I'm drawing the line. And having the ability to do that is incredibly powerful.
Agreed. Along the topic, how I've kind of looked at it is you're kind of doing a disservice to the relationship if you keep them around when they shouldn't be around. So what I mean by that is like, let's say I have a buddy and we're on different paths for our career, for how we treat friends, how we treat family, faith, whatever. If I hold him around too long, I eventually will resent that relationship and I will blame him for not allowing me to bring up to my top potential. You know what I mean? So for now sure. Our relationship is not only how it was, it's actually worse how it was because we held on to each other. And he resents me because every time I'm around him, I'm talking about the future, my ambitions, whatever. And he's like, dude, just shut up. I don't want to talk about this anymore. And so it becomes like a tough thing. I agree with you. There's not like an easy way to do it. You just got to be outside your comfort zone.
Right. And I was thinking about this earlier. I think so much of life is about your ability to manage being outside your comfort zone. And that situation that you just described, like the thing that's most uncomfortable with that, beyond just like how you feel internally, is having that tough conversation and owning how you feel about the relationship, how you feel like you guys are on a different path. Like that is a difficult conversation to have, but again, like the awareness and then having the ability to take action on the awareness and have that difficult conversation, like that sets you up to go, you know, excel on the path that you're on. And yeah, so getting out of your comfort zone is tremendously important, really in all aspects of life.
I think resonates with a quote that almost everybody says and everybody's heard is get comfortable with being uncomfortable. Now, if you tell yourself that every morning, I guarantee you'll be a lot better off. You'll go about your day a lot differently. You know, those even I'll even take it to another degree, that uncomfortable conversation you're talking about. I haven't had to have that necessarily with family members, but it's been in essence kind of a similar aspect, you know, had a different childhood than others might have growing up. And that doesn't belay on any factor other than, you know, the relationships you build are important and you get to choose those. I think that's another really cool aspect of life is you get to choose who you want to go up to and talk to, you know, as long as you take that first step, as long as you get comfortable with being uncomfortable and making that first introduction. And you could potentially have a greater relationship with that person than you do your own family. And that could lead to better opportunities.
Right. Yeah. It's all about choosing your discomfort too. Cause it's like, you can choose the discomfort of like the resentment or, you know, the discomfort of being in a job that maybe you don't really care for or feels aligned, or you can choose your discomfort, like which one is more comfortable. And I think when the comfort that you have with staying the same becomes less than the comfort that you have with like wanting to actually, or that when it becomes less comfortable to stay the same than to go after whatever the thing is or have the conversation, that's when you'll make the change.
That's the threshold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe switching gears, but what advice would you give to someone who maybe doesn't even know what they want to do in their career? You talk a lot about how there is no limits and whatever you do, you should push that and take it as far as you can. What if someone has no idea what they want to do, right? They talk about, I'm going to go on a tangent here. There's a sadness and anxiety. Sadness is you have no options and you don't know what to do about it. Anxiety is you have too many options and you don't know what to do about it. So if someone is if they're sad or they're anxious, what would you give advice to that 22-year-old to 26-year-old who's just trying to figure out life right now?
Yeah, I think we overwhelm ourselves, you know, with that anxiety example. It's like, there's too many options and I don't know what to do. It's like, yeah, I mean, there's limitless options, but also have you thought about what you like? Have you thought about what you're good at? Like, I'm sure you guys have heard of the Ikigai, right? Like it's the intersection of, you know, what you're good at, what you enjoy doing, what the world needs and what you can get paid for. And like, I don't know, man, I think you can get paid to do anything these days. And so, you know, if you're 22 to 26, or even if you're 35, like take the time to sit down and think about what you like. Like everybody has things that they like. Everybody has ideas. Like we all have these big or maybe small brains in our head. And, you know, if you just take the time to just sit down, be present, take out a piece of paper and maybe just like write down and really think about what you like, some stuff's going to come to your mind. And the other part too, is that like, just be patient. Like you don't have to have it all figured out today. That was something I really struggled with, was like every job I had, it was like, okay, how can I as fast as possible climb to the top position on the ladder? I joined Texas Instruments straight out of college and I was a HR trainee. And when I left Texas Instruments, the number one reason why I took the next job was because I was told if I did this role for like a year and a half, then I would be put in a position to climb the corporate ladder and do whatever I wanted. And I didn't evaluate, like, is this actually aligned with work I want to do? Like, does this actually feel like a good fit for me? No, it was like, how quickly can I be the quote unquote CEO, just to throw a title out there? How quickly can I climb that ladder? And I think it was you know, ultimately, again, just yearning for like something to be enough, which it never was, and just being in this massive rush to get somewhere. But again, like I mentioned, every time I got to that thing that was supposed to be the thing, it wasn't. And so I think, you know, anxiety is not being in the present moment. And I know, you know, we all face moments in time where we maybe are like thinking about something that happened in our past and we don't really love it. Or we're thinking about, oh, I have to do this in the future, and like having those feelings of anxiety. But like the power of just being in the present moment is incredible, because the present moment is where you have the opportunity to, you know, make decisions that are going to impact future moments.
That's huge.
Yeah. And so it might even be just like literally meditating for 3 minutes or 5 minutes, just like sit still, put your phone down, close your eyes and focus on your breath for 5 minutes and stop thinking about all the options and all the things you could do. Just think about, what do I need to do right now? So that's a practical way to like get back to the present. But yeah, in terms of figuring out like what it is you want to do, think about what you like and go from there. You know, my sister's 24 and she's in her first like big time job out of college and getting phenomenal experience. And do I think she's probably going to do the job forever? No. But like we talked about in the very beginning of the podcast, it's like she's getting incredible experience. She's paying all her bills. She has money to do whatever she wants to do. Like there's so much beauty in where she's at. And so if she spends all her time thinking about all the options she has and everything she could be doing, then she's not going to experience the greatness of what she's currently doing. And so, yeah, be where your feet are, have those big time goals and have the microscope goals to get you there. But like more than anything, enjoy the present moment, enjoy the journey, enjoy the process, and realize that, you know, great things take time.
You reminded me of I'm not a big like 1984 guy, George Orwell, but you reminded me of a quote that's from George Orwell. And it says, who controls the past controls the future, who controls the present controls the past. And so if you like, the biggest thing is people always want to look back at their past and do, you know, I wish I did this and this and this and put it all on the accomplishment board. But in order to control the future, you have to control the present. So it's exactly yes. What you're saying. It's pretty cool.
Spot on. Shout out, George.
I feel like that's the book that everybody makes you read in English class in high school. And you're like, why am I reading this? And then you're like in your 20s and 30s. And you're like, oh, dang, that's kind of good. I should have paid attention maybe more in high school, but
we don't have to close with this, but I think kind of the next segment that we should talk about is the most important one, is the walk-on mentality and what it truly means and how you define it and how you've been able to share your experience to help others.
Yeah. So the way that I speak about the walk-on mentality is I say, it's more than a mindset. It's truly a transformative approach that allows us to surpass limitations and achieve our full potential. You know, it really is the belief that there are no limits to what we can accomplish when we believe in ourselves, but also when we're willing to do the work. Because if you believe in yourself, but you don't have the work ethic, you don't have the drive to actually achieve your goals, then that's not going to happen for you. It's not just like, oh, let me sit on my butt and think about all the things I want to do and they're magically going to happen for me. Like, no, that's not how it works. You have to believe in yourself, but you also have to be willing to do the work. And so that is the walk-on mentality. And like I mentioned to you guys, maybe before we started recording, like this applies in all areas of our life. It's like if you're in a relationship that's not going how you want it to go, but you see the potential there, you have the opportunity to make a change and fix the relationship, or you know, maybe it's not the right relationship and you can leave it, like, but that's up to you. If you want to change your physical body and you feel like, oh, I'm scared to go to the gym, going to the gym's hard, eating the right types of food is difficult, like, yeah, I mean, maybe it's not the easiest thing to clean up your diet, maybe it's not the easiest thing to get in the gym, but like if you truly want to change your body, then like you can do it if you're willing to put in the work in your career, whether it's going for a promotion, whether it's asking for a raise, whether it's starting a business, like no matter what it is, if you believe in your idea and you're willing to do the research and figure out what it takes and then take action on that idea, like you can build the business that you want to build. And this has been from my walk-on journey with football to getting jobs in the various industries that I mentioned, to starting a podcast, to starting my own business. Like, the first thing that happened for me to do any of that stuff was I believed that it was possible. And so, yeah, the walk-on mentality, it'll change your life. The other thing that, you know, the walk-on mentality has kind of evolved over the years is, like, for a period of time, it was all so wrapped up in, like, the achievement of these huge goals. But really, for me, like, the process and the consistency and showing up every day, like, that's the most important part. And also realizing that, like I mentioned earlier, like, it takes time and it's okay to take rest. And rest is actually quite necessary for you to achieve these massive goals you have. And you have to be able to find the balance within the journey as well. Because I think, especially as former athletes, like, we're conditioned to grind 24/7 and never stop. And I think it helps us in a lot of ways, but also, you know, the reality is we're human beings and we need rest at times as well. So I would say it's a savage yet balanced approach to creating the life and the reality that you want to experience. And anybody can use it, male, female, you know, 22-year-old fresh out of college, or 45-year-old or 60-year-old. Like, the walk-on mentality is for anybody who wants to make change in their life. And of course I do, but I just love it.
My wife, Morgan, her grandpa, he reminds me of the walk-in mentality. He's 83 right now, but he'll go up dancing, like country dancing, like line dancing at 83 years old. He'll go up to Wyoming and go and do that with his buddies and friends. And then he's still pursuing a company in the oil industry and doing his own thing and still, like, out scouting oil and finding new land and stuff. It applies, like you said, to 22, 45, 65, or even 83. Like, and I think that he's an inspiration. I don't know how he does it. I hope that I look like him and am acting like him at 83. He's a sharp guy. But the one thing I wanted to ask you is, how important is it to love the process? You mentioned that, and how maybe that's more important than even just taking the leaps of faith that an entrepreneur will do. How important is loving the process and being there every day?
Man, I think that's the most important part, because I think, especially our generation, you know, there's so much immediate gratification. There's so much dopamine that we can just get immediately at any point in time. And for me personally, but, like, when I think back to my experience as a student athlete, I don't really miss playing in the games. I really don't. I miss the off-season workouts, and I miss 7-on-7. I miss, like, the grind with my teammates and, like, really going through the process to build us up, to put us in position to have the kind of seasons we wanted to. And so, you know, it's the same thing now. Like, I've run one marathon. I'm training for my second marathon. I've done a 70.3 triathlon. I've done a sprint triathlon. I've competed in high rocks. Like, I've done all these different kind of fitness competitions, and the same thing has shown up in those environments and experiences as well, where it's like, I love almost like stacking those daily bricks and knowing, like, okay, today, like, I've got an 8-mile run that I need to complete. And, like, I'm going to get that done and checking that box and, you know, having a good session, and then knowing that, like, okay, tomorrow I'm going to have to show up again. And, like, maybe I'm not going to feel great, but, like, I got to show up and I got to, you know, give it my best every single day, and know that in due time, if I continue to show up every single day, continue to get my best every single day, like, I'm going to be happy with the end result no matter what, because I did my absolute best every single day. And so I mentioned patience a while ago, but it's like, for me specifically in my journey, again, when I made that move from TI, I wanted to climb the ladder and be the CEO immediately. And it's like, hey dude, like, that's just not how that works. Like, when I had my first med device job, you know, I felt like I was ready to be promoted like 6 months in the game. And it's like, I probably was, but, you know, you got to grind and earn your stripes and really earn those opportunities, right? And so knowing that things don't happen overnight. And if you want to experience this greatness, if you want to create great things, like, it takes showing up every single day and really respecting and being in that process to have the kind of results that we want. Big thing, I had a mental performance coach in college named Brian Kane, and we talked a lot about process over outcome. And like, I live that out in my life a lot now, where I really try to detach myself from outcomes, because at the end of the day, like, certain things you cannot control, but what you can control is how you show up every single day and being in that process. So yeah, it's incredibly important to just be in the process, love the process, trust the process, and let the chips fall where they may.
I think Jake and I really resonate with that specifically. I mean, the process over the outcome, like, in similarity, we were fortunate enough to both get Division I scholarships, but I myself, when I joined University of Utah lacrosse, we were a club team at that time. You know, my freshman year, we weren't a Division I program, and so I was betting on that opportunity and taking a chance there, in the same in all of our industries that we were in. You know, finance and software engineering, you know, typically you have to be at a prestige school and you have to be at a target program and have really high grades. And if you're not, then it's even harder. So like, the work we had to put in, networking, making phone calls, introducing ourselves, is a lot more work than others had to do. And that's not discounting the people that were fortunate enough to go to those schools, but it's just in lieu with a process that you see time and time again that leads to success. You know, these people that are on social media that you see completing all these tremendous goals, you know, starting these million-dollar businesses, completing marathons and sub 2 hours, like, crazy trials and tribulations went in to get to there. You know, that's a blip in time for them. And just like you said, you'd rather go back and be in the grit and grind and in the trenches, because it's a lot more fun to do that than just to live in that 30 seconds of fame and opportunity.
Yeah, man. I mean, we really didn't even dive too much into like my playing experience, but to kind of piggyback on what you just said, it's like, when you walk on somewhere, you can't expect to get a single snap of playing time. You can't expect to get a scholarship. You can't expect any of that. And so really what you're doing is showing up every day, like, with that goal in mind. For me at that time, it was like, I wanted that scholarship, but all I could do was get into that process and grind and be a leader and like, do my best, be the first man there, last one to leave, like, extra film study, like, do all of that stuff with the hope that I got the scholarship. But if I didn't get that scholarship till after my second year. And so like, it was never a situation where it was like, oh, this is guaranteed, I know it's coming. It was like, I'm just going to keep doing the work and, you know, hope the chips fall where I want them to. But like, if you're doing stuff only for the outcome that you want, then you might have your feelings hurt a pretty fair amount of time. And that's really cool. The story about Utah being a club team and you got there, like, it's like, you thought you were going to play on a club team, you know? And by the time you left, I don't know what y'all's record was like, but it wasn't a club team. And so, yeah, the process in all areas is incredibly important to be able to navigate, and not just navigate it, but like, kind of live in it and love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, great. Unless you have anything else, we like to usually wrap it up with a short segment, just quick Q&A. We'll ask you a question and then just one word response and one word answer.
Okay.
So Jake, cool. If you want to start.
Yeah. So like, an example would be, we say football and you say walk on mentality or something like that. The first thing that pops into your mind.
Okay.
So first thing, money.
No limits.
Significant other.
Kalen.
Football.
Great experience. I know I'm supposed to do one word, but great life experience.
Running in 90 degree plus weather.
Therapy.
High rocks.
Invigorating.
Swimming.
Horrible.
Agreed. My wife was a college swimmer, and like, Dude, we had tried to race one time and it was literally like 20 meet, maybe 20 yards. And she beat me by half a body length, maybe more.
Dude,
It's insane. I don't know how you do it.
swimming by far is the most difficult sport. And like, so 70.3 is a 1.2 mile swim, a 56 mile bike, and a 13.1 mile run. And the swim took me 46 minutes. And I thought I was gonna die. Like, swimming is so hard. I'm so slow. And yeah, I despise swimming.
I'll give you one more. Information.
E, information is key.
I like it. Well, awesome. Thank you for your time. It was great to have you on. Loved hearing your story. A lot of key nuggets in that recording. And for those listening, feel free to give Jackson a follow on Instagram. And if you want to call out any other places they can find you and reach out.
Yeah, first of all, thank you guys so much for having me. Phenomenal job. I love what y'all are doing. I remember starting my podcast at a relatively similar age to y'all and just wanting to like impact and help people. And I know that this will no doubt help a lot of, a lot of former student athletes and a lot of people who aren't student athletes as well. So salute to you guys for doing this and thank you for having me on. And then to the listeners, thank you guys for listening. If you would like to look me up, I'm Jackson R. Mitchell on Instagram. The Walk On Mentality on Instagram is the podcast page. And then my website is www.walkonmentality.co. So check us out. Would love to support you guys on your journey in any way. And yeah, thanks for listening.
Awesome. Yeah. We'll have those linked in the show notes as well. And
yeah, thanks for everything.
Thank you guys
for
having
it.
Me. For sure.